Today's program is brought to you by Egg Restaurant, located at 109 North 3rd Street in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, visit eggrestaurant.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Hey. Are you on over there?
Welcome back.
Your mic's not live. Welcome to the Speakeasy. My name is Souther Teague, and I'm here with
Damon Bolte.
There we go. Today's the day, buddy.
Today is the day, man. Sorry for the late start today. It's one hell of a day,
it's
right?
It's an historic day.
Ahistoric or anhistoric?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we've just been we're 30 minutes late to broadcast live because we've been trying to console our souls here with lots of meat and pizza and beer.
Meatza.
My God. So where were you last night when the shit went down?
I was at, you know, that little joint that I love so much, La French Diner, right down the street from my apartment.
Your pop-up that you did a couple months ago.
My residency. They have a little TV that they'll pull out for big events. This was certainly a big event. Mm-hmm. The entire room was kind of there together. A bunch of strangers, but, you know, together. And we watched, you know, pretty much shock and awe, horror. I don't know. It was not good.
It should have been last week, you know, for Halloween.
Yeah. I can't, you know, keep waiting for someone. It's like, is this one of the cold starts for Saturday Night Live? It's really realistic.
Right. Yeah, man. It's a very gray day in many ways. Right?
I couldn't stay till the end. For all the votes to be tallied, I walked out. I went home and went to bed and hoped that I would wake up to better news.
Right. Same here, man. I was at the New York Bar Institute all day. You were there, actually.
I yesterday. Delivered a talk in the morning at 10 a.m. Oof. And then bounced around for a while, but we just missed each other. I left around 1:00. You got there around 1:00.
Yeah, I got there at 1:00. I was working with Brooklyn Gin, doing tasting rooms, and like popping around, saying hi to a bunch of people. And after that, like my good friend Amanda Womack, who lives out in San Francisco, she works for Anchor Distilling. She was in town, and we popped over to Giuseppe's Bar, the Suffolk Arms, and that's where the election coverage started. And I was like, you know what, man. I got a bad feeling about all this. I'm just going to go to my bar. So we went back to Grand Army and hung out there. And same thing. I didn't make it to the end, man. I was like,
couldn't do it.
You know, several daiquiris in.
I have a buddy who predicted. He said when the Cubs won, he said Trump's going to win. He said the prediction from
Back to the
Future is off by 1 year.
Yeah, Biff instead of Biff. Trump. But yeah, same thing. Yeah, I don't know, man. This is it's a weird day. It's
dark
weird
day and some dark times ahead, I assume. Well, but let's talk about better things.
Let's talk about something else.
Both of us are promising to hang signs on the front of our bars tonight that say, let's talk about something else. I might change my sign. Let's talk about anything else.
Anything else, yeah.
So let's talk about something else. You went to Portland last week.
I was in Portland last week. Portland, Oregon. I was out there doing some consulting, some classes. You know what, man? Last time I was in Portland, Oregon was about 4 years ago for the Portland Bar, for Portland Cocktail Week, rather.
Right, which is now Bar Institute, which is a traveling show, and it's here in New York this week.
Right, exactly. And, Portland is an amazing city. It's
really cool.
It's a really, really amazing city. And it's cool to see, you know, just over like a 4 year period, even a year period. How much a city can evolve as far as like its food and beverage community and industry. And it's Portland's crazy, man.
It's really, very close-knit town. And I think it's one of those towns that feels authentic because it's able to make fun of itself and, you know, Portlandia or whatever.
Sure,
but like,
sure.
It's a town that can take its own hits, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, like, it's one of those, I don't know, they kind of like, to me, like the way I understand it, what they kind of like put their own pressure on themselves. There's not like, it's not like New York City or like San Francisco or LA where it's like, there's all this pressure coming from, they created their own thing, like food and beverage. You know, obviously they have like a lot of like breweries and distilleries and now distilleries, but wineries in mm-hmm. the past. And, but as far as like the actual industry goes and like the eyes that are on them, they kind of like, they, it's very unique because they kind of put their, they put the pressure on themselves, man.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. And like, you know, like I was hanging out with my buddies at Bull in China who make like awesome.
Love their stuff.
Barwares, mixing glass and stuff. And you know, they're just driven because they have the time and the space and the desire to do that. You know, they don't have to.
They don't
have to be doing this. Like here, you know, in New York City, we're so used to the hustle.
The rat race.
You got to do it. You got to do all this, all these different things. But like, you know, I went to the Aria Gin Distillery and aviation, like there's so many.
They're pushing them. It's self-motivation. Yeah, whereas exactly. here a lot of our motivation comes from.
From
you have to, it's need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over there, it's more like, hey, I want to.
Exactly. And that's really refreshing to me.
Yeah. It's a great difference of mentality.
Yeah. You were just in San Diego, right?
I was, just for one day. It was a crazy trip.
One day.
Yeah, it was 30 hours. So, you know, and a lot of that was in the air, going there and back. But I was hanging out with Eric Castro. You know Eric. At his place, Polite Provisions. And we were kind of having an unofficial launch party for a new flavor of bitters from Scrappy's Bitters that Eric, myself, and Austin Henley, formerly of Amore Margo, we all worked on we collaborated on a flavor, and it's called Polite Amour. So,
what's that about, man?
It is ginger hibiscus with some notes of orange and peppercorn. It's really light and bright and delicious. And they have 5 cases on their way to Amore Margo now, and I think about the same amount's on its way to Polite Provisions. I think what we're going to do is sell it just at the 2 venues for a little while, and then it'll go national. I'm not sure how it's going to work, but it's really tasty and it's cool. So Austin's moving away to Costa Rica, so we wanted to have like a little launch party before he left, and he was already in California on route to Costa Rica, so we thought, well, let's do it over there.
Nice.
So I jumped a plane, hung out in San Diego for a day, ate some delicious Mexican food.
Yeah.
Like, why is Mexican food such a missing element here in New York City?
I don't know.
Like, it's there are lots of Mexican people here. Where's the food?
I know. It's
mind-numbing.
Bizarre.
It's mind-numbing. And it's a thing that New Yorkers lament all the time.
Well, you know what? Actually,
so I had 4 meals in 30 hours, and they were all Mexican food.
That's amazing. Well, you know, another thing, everything's so fucking expensive here that, like, you know, Mexican food should not be expensive.
Right.
I mean, tacos should not be. How much did you pay for a taco?
Exactly. We got a taco, huge fish Baja style fried fish taco for $1.75.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
I bet your Topo Chico probably cost more than that.
Probably. Yeah, we had Jarritos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mineral agua. Man, that's the thing I really miss about like being like in the Southwest and on the West Coast is all the awesome tacos and like. So we're talking about the Scrappy Spitters that you guys developed. Mm-hmm. So, what is your like desired application like as far as cocktail goes for that? I mean, like. You said that it's peppercorn and...
The lower notes are definitely pepper. It's it's a gentian bitter, so it's bitter from, you know, floral notes. The lower notes are peppercorn and orange, but the higher notes in there are hibiscus and ginger. And the ginger is really sort of, you know, sharp and biting. So, you know, I think it's more refreshing style cocktails, lighter cocktails. Of course, at Amore, we don't use any juices, so this is a good way to get that sort of refreshing note into some cocktails. We collaborated with Nova Fogo Cachaça out there at Polite Provisions and made a cocktail with them on the menu. And we did Amore Margo style. We didn't do anything we don't normally do. So no juice, no sugar, nothing shaken for that night. It's delicious stuff. I'm excited to have it on the bar at Amore as soon as it gets here. I'm excited to sell it to people. It was a fun project. I'm stoked.
I can't wait to try, man.
Dude. I'll bring a bottle next week. Well, I'll bring a bottle as soon as it comes in.
Yeah. Nice. So did you use, I mean, you obviously used this bitter in some of the cocktails.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. And so it was Nova Fogo Cachaça. We did, Aperol, Amaro Montenegro, and the bitters sort of like a Negroni build, with a grapefruit twist. So it really heightened that sort of like citrusy floral element, because, you know, hibiscus also a flower, gentian is a bittering flower. And then that sharp, like, little ginger pinch on the end of it. So it was nice, bright, refreshing. We stirred it and served it over the rocks, but I could easily see maybe building that drink in a Collins glass and putting some bubbly water in it, too.
That also sounds great. So, like, you said you were only there for 30 hours. I mean, like, did you?
Ish. I didn't really count them up. But, yeah, I flew over on Halloween, which sucked. I really like Halloween, and I was on a plane for Halloween. I missed it. And people were like, you should dress up anyway. I was like, I don't feel like the TSA would be happy.
Yeah, seriously, man.
I should have dressed like a TSA guy. Maybe that'd get me through the line faster.
Yeah, probably.
I'm gonna think about that from now on anyway. Normal days. I got to get those blue gloves.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, I was flying on Halloween proper. I get there, hung out with my buddy Chris Keach, who works for Jägermeister. He picked me up from the airport and got some of that delicious Mexican food. We walked around on the beach, found a sand dollar. Pretty cool. Like, literally, right when we walked on the beach. And then set up at Polite, which is a gorgeous bar. Hung out with Eric and went and did an episode of his show. He has a weekly broadcast. Broadcast? What is it when you're on screen?
I think that works. Broadcast.
It's the same, right?
It works.
So, yeah, he has a video broadcast every week called Bartender at Large. So we did an episode of that, me and Austin and Eric, in his studio, and then we did the event. It was great fun. And then basically I flew back, so it was really in and out trip.
Yeah,
not as relaxing as your 4 days in Portland.
It was work
hanging out with Alex Day and Jeff Morgenthaler.
I know. Yeah, that was really cool. I was hanging out in the Ace Hotel, the lobby, and I see this blonde dude walk passed me twice, and I was like, I texted him, I'm like, hey, are you in Portland, Oregon? You just walked past me twice in the Ace Hotel? And it was Alex Day. And he's like, holy shit, I couldn't tell if that was you or not. Anyway, we got to go to the Clyde Common, my first time there, and hung out with Alex and a bunch of other people. Jeff Seymour, who's...
Banjo there?
Banjo was there, yeah. And it was my first time there, and I just, man, that bar is really, I mean, Jeff's been on the show before, but we had never actually met. He did a phone interview last year, I think it was last year, when the book came out, the bar book, and yeah, we finally got to meet, and got to hang out at his bar, and I get it, I get why people love that bar so much.
Yeah,
it's like, it's not like this exclusive, like, underground behind like no. You know, a doorman, like
big,
it's
a giant window right there to the sidewalk, like,
yeah, it's like open, airy, light, bright, like,
yeah,
it's just really inviting, and it's a good bar to hang out in.
Polite Provisions was a lot like that, you know, and it was high ceiling, half the bar's ceiling is a sun roof, big windows, like bright and airy. I think it just must be the West Coast also, yeah. You know,
I mean, you're...
We just cram everything into whatever nook we can here in New York.
That is true. That is... Yeah, that makes... When you say it that way, it actually makes more sense that we have so many, like, dark...
Yeah.
You know, like, just really... Yeah. Like
yeah, literally, we just cram... You know, we have to... Yeah. Like, more is a hole in the wall. Like, it's...
Yeah, but you have windows all over the
front. You have a window, yeah. I mean... It's filled with shelves that are full of retail stuff, so you can't really see through the window, but it's a big window.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You have light.
Get some light before the sun goes down.
And I mean, you know, like Mother Pearl has windows on a good portion of the facade. I think it's like, I mean, like with Grand Army, it's like we made sure that we had a lot of windows so we could have a lot of natural light and keep it airy and light and whatnot and inviting, you know, it just naturally is inviting. I think that's something, yeah, you're right. We don't get a lot of that in New York City.
It's just how the real estate works.
Yeah. I mean...
And the rent is too damn high.
The rent is too damn high. when you're on an airplane, what's your go-to drink?
For whatever reason, it's a thing that I don't really drink on the ground.
I mean, we know about chartreuse.
Yes, we know about chartreuse. And we know that I drink an Underberg right when I wake up every day. I drink scotch. I ask for whatever scotch they have. I don't care. So I always order a beer, typically whatever, you know, frosty cold, as they are on planes. that's not very flavorful beer, and I always get scotch. Scotch is my airplane drink.
When you're ordering rounds of drinks on the airplane, how many do you order at a time?
I always order a beer and two of those little bottles of scotch at a time. And depending, obviously, on how long the flight is, I have plenty of those.
Yeah.
I don't really like to fly. We've talked about this before. I don't really like to travel. I have lived all over the place, but I prefer to just stay where I live.
Really? I love flying. I
you flew first class this time.
Something like that. But the thing is... No, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, my favorite bar is, like, in the sky, you know? Like, I love sitting next to strangers, and even if they're, like, even if that stranger's, like, some screaming kid or some, like, old-timer telling me awesome stories, like, I just love the fact that, and I have vertigo. Like, I have really bad vertigo. Like, so heights are not good for me. Like, if I... Like, when I'm changing the light bulbs outside of the bar, like, on top of a ladder, like, I start getting dizzy, and, like, I can't.
Who knew?
Yeah, it's weird. But when I'm in a plane, it's
different. Sit in the aisle or the window?
I usually sit in the aisle because...
Yeah, you got long legs.
Because I'm drinking a lot, and I have to go to the bathroom all the time. Anyway, I'm a gin and tonic guy on the plane.
Oh, yeah? Refreshing, bright, kind of a...
Yeah.
I think I don't understand the people who try and drink cocktails on a plane. It's not... I think it's just... Don't take that risk. Just get something neater. Yeah, maybe with some tonic. Something that you know that's not going to...
Yeah, man.
And a can of beer.
See, okay. The beer thing... Okay.
But we're both drinking a can of beer right now.
Well, I know, but we're not... We're in a studio. We're not in an airplane. The thing is with beer on planes is that I feel like I have to pee a lot more.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm always in the aisle, but it doesn't matter. Like, of course, like, the one time that I get, like, stuck in a window seat, I'm going to, like, decide that it's a good idea to start drinking beer on a flight. But I was on a flight back from Amsterdam a few years back, and, of course, like, there, you know, Heineken was the beer on the plane. And,
dude, everything's branded.
I was sitting next to this couple, and the guy was drinking beer, and I was like... It's like, yeah, we, you know, struck up this conversation, and it was like, you know what, dude? I want to drink a Heineken, too. So I started drinking beer on this flight, and I'm in the aisle next to these two people, and just foolishly, I've got it, like, just hanging out, like, on my tray table, and every time we hit turbulence, the beer would just, like, flip over into my lap, in my crotch. And, like, this happened, like, more times than I should even admit, because you should know by,
once,
like,
burned, lesson learned.
Yeah, you should know by trial and error that this was a bad idea, and I just let it happen about 5 times. So, like, I had, like, I think, and that, like, for, like, for, like, the, like, 6-hour flight, I probably had, like, I had ordered 8 beers, and I probably got to drink, like, 2 of them. I was wearing the rest of them.
Yikes.
It was terrible.
Yeah, the plane ate one of my phones.
Spilled
one of those aforementioned bottles of scotch all over the whole thing.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, dude, okay, so you were just teaching a class at the Bar Institute.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's bring in our guest today.
We should have a guest.
Lindsay just showed up.
Hi.
Speaking of the Bar Institute, welcome.
Hi, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I taught a class. It's a long title. The best part of my class is that you just say the title twice and the class is over. The Psychology of the Room, How to Use Inherent Human Behavior to Manipulate People Through Their Time in Your Space.
Is it surprising at all to you that that's the name Souther picked?
Not at all.
It's one of our most popular classes.
Thanks.
For a lot of reasons.
Well, thank you. So, Lindsay, we've been just sort of chatting, waiting for you to get here.
Thank you.
You were stuck in traffic. We had issues getting the show off the ground in the first place. No big deal. You're here. We're here. Mm. We all survived last night. We've already gone over that.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about you real quick.
Sure.
Where do you live? In an airplane?
Oh, I mostly live in an airplane, but...
We were just talking about drinking on airplanes. Perfect.
Well, you know, I typically don't drink on the airplane because I have to drink so much when I get on the ground.
Right.
But I am on an airplane most of the time. I am from New York originally.
Mm-hmm.
My whole family's here, and I love New York. Mm-hmm. Just bought a house in Kentucky, though, so I'm spending a little bit of time in Kentucky, too.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
And you are the mastermind behind Lush Life Productions. Tell the audience what that is.
For lack of a better term, we're really a bartender advocacy agency. My job is to make sure that bartenders have all of the things they need and want. So making sure that there's education readily available, making sure there are networking opportunities that are readily available. We don't have, like a lot of other industries, we don't have schools set up and designed just for us, particularly in the very hospitality and service-driven portion of the industry that we all sort of operate and live in. So much of what I do is dedicated to making sure that we have the ability to share the wisdom and brilliance from people like you too, with the next generation of bartenders out there.
Awesome. And you do that through things like Bar Institute, which you can probably describe better than we have.
I don't know about that. Bar Institute is our newest program. It was born out of Portland Cocktail Week, which was an event that we started 6 years ago. And Portland Cocktail Week started out as kind of like a regular cocktail festival, just like a lot of the other ones that exist all over the U.S. But as it evolved and as we were spending time with it, the last thing I wanted was another excuse for people to get together and just have a party. We've got plenty of those. We can have a party here right now, actually.
We're doing it right now.
Yeah. So
we're drinking beers.
Exactly. So, you know, you can, that really wasn't all that compelling to me and wasn't really meeting or achieving any of the bigger goals that we had. So we really looked at it and we thought about how we could make education the center of something in a way that was maybe a little less focused on tasting, a little less focused on brands, and a little bit more focused on how we can get better at doing our jobs. And when we had that realization about 3 years ago, the program went to something that about, I would say, 750 to 1,000 people went to a program that 5,000 people showed up for in Portland last year, which is a really great problem to have, but unfortunately is a problem. I couldn't accommodate 5,000 people. So we looked at, okay, how do we do this? How do we make sure that all of these people who want this education can get it? And the answer to me was pretty simple. Let's bring it to the people. Let's go to them as much as we can. So this year we split the program up into 6 cities, the last stop being here in New York, which we are right in the middle yeah. of at the moment. And it's so nice to be able to come home and do a program like this. But we did them all over the country this year. We're going to be doing them again. We'll be doing 5 cities next year. We're actually going to go to Canada for one of the stops next year, which I'm really excited about, too.
A lot of people going to Canada today.
Well, you know, seems only appropriate to say that we are going to be doing a stop in Canada coming up. But we'll still be here in the U.S. New York and Portland will always be sort of our fixed points, and we'll be kind of orbiting around the rest of the U.S. to make sure that we're answering the needs and demands of the community.
That's awesome. And that's crazy that it jumped fivefold.
I think it was as simple as saying, hey, guys, what we care about is making sure you get better at your job and giving you the tools and resources to do the job the way that you want to. You know, there's a lot to be said for getting to spend an hour to listen to you talk about the psychology of the room. That's a big deal. For a lot of folks.
It's a big deal. Damon, you hear that?
Yeah, man. I wish I would have been there, but it was like a little earlier than
10 a.m. Hey, you know, I was 10 a.m. on election day, and yeah. I still had a full room. So
exactly.
She's right. They're hungry for education, and you're feeding yeah. them. That's great.
There's just so many. There are so many experts that I'm so lucky to have access to that I count my friends, you know, you guys certainly included. It seems selfish of me to keep all of your brilliance to myself. Oh. Got to share it, you know. Oh.
You came late, but you came strong with your compliments.
Yeah, you did. Well, let's talk about some of your other programs sure. as well. Cane Camp launched. Is it in its second year already?
This will be our third year coming up
at
the end of June.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I know.
Well, time flies.
Camp Runamuck is going into its 6th year, and Camp Runamuck is my favorite thing that I think I've ever done as a person, because it encompasses and embodies all of the ethos that I've been collecting since I was, you know, 15 and really into punk rock, right? I get to bring people out into the woods, and we get to get really excited about being together and creating a community. You know, I'm a really big believer in giving people the ability to connect and create really meaningful relationships that grow into sort of this larger community. No relationships, no community is more evident to me, at least when I walk into a room as those that are built at Camp Run Amok. So much of the program is absolutely focused on going and learning about whiskey. Certainly we do that. We go to six distilleries.
Yeah, let's just drop that in real fast. Yeah. So Camp Run Amok is a camp for bartenders in Kentucky. It's a week long, and I've been to one. Have you been?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Got to come out.
It's quite an experience. we all go down. We stay at an actual child summer camp that you've taken over for the week. Mm-hmm. And we actually, there's volunteer day at the end where we do some repairs and make the place better than we found it, which is awesome. And
you wouldn't believe the difference between the way that camp looked 5 years ago and the way it looks today.
Yeah.
It looks brand new comparatively.
Yeah. And so then we all come down and we all get to go on all these educational trips to all the local distilleries, which are plentiful down there. We go to Cooperages, et cetera. So it's another educational experience. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a community building / bonding experience because you're a week in the woods with a bunch of people you don't know.
Yeah. And the way we look at it is Bar Institute, everything that we do, the two main pillars are community building and education. And Bar Institute, education's number one, community building's number two. And at Camp Run Amok, we switch those. Certainly, there's plenty of education. And certainly, you get to see how whiskey is made with your own hands. And actually, at some of the distilleries, you actually get to physically make whiskey that goes in a barrel that the next campers get to taste the next year, which is really cool. But really, what it's about more than anything else is making sure that we make those connections and we make those bonds so that we can grow as a community and really create those ways to share information. Because essentially, when you have the community, you can flow information back and forth, and that education becomes much easier.
Yeah.
Right. And then just a few years ago now, you started Cane Camp, which is a similar model.
Yes.
But it's in Puerto Rico.
So yeah.
It's rum driven.
I want to go to that.
Is that the one for you?
Oh, I want to go to both.
Okay. Yeah. You should, man. I got to tell you, it was life altering for me to go to Camp Rum. I'm not being hyperbolic at all.
Let's do a show from King Camp.
All right.
There we go. I love it. Yeah. King Camp was born out of
my calendar.
Right. Was born out of two of my very good friends who work in Puerto Rican rum coming to me and saying, it's really great that you're doing all this work for Kentucky and for American whiskey, of which they are both big fans. But we really think you should bring people to our island and meet our friends and show them what Puerto Rican hospitality looks like. We're really proud of the spirits we make down there. And it's, at first I was like, do we want to go down and Camp Run Amok is so perfect. Could we do one that we're as excited about? And 10 minutes in Puerto Rico. And I knew it was going to be incredible, and not just because the beaches and not just be, doesn't hurt. Obviously,
the
doesn't
scenic
hurt.
Beauty in Kentucky isn't hurting King Camp either. It is beautiful
it
down
is,
there.
It is. The knobs and the hills are just stunning down in Kentucky. But it's really about the community down there. And, I've been so lucky to get to know the bartenders and the bartending community in San Juan. We're actually planning on doing a Bar Institute down there next year as well.
Cool.
If only because I am completely obsessed and in love with the community down there. Watching them build something out of nothing in bars that have no running water. To be on the list of world's best bars and not have running water in your bar is pretty incredible. So
yeah.
Way to go, La Factoria. I love you guys. So, they're really some incredible people down there. And we've been really fortunate to get to work with them. And our friends at Don Q who bring us down there really have shown us what that hospitality, Puerto Rican hospitality, is all about. So it's been really great getting to do that program. We have another one, Juniper Harvest, that we do up in Wisconsin, where we learn about gin with our friends at Death's Door. And then next up, we're going to be, I think, well, I'm knocking on the wood here, if all goes well, we'll be adding cognac to our list
so
of
in.
Jams.
Yeah.
We're working
love
on that.
Cognac.
I think this is the first time I'm publicly telling people that, but
wow.
we're planning on doing a cognac camp next. I'm really
nice.
Excited.
Hot off the presses. That sounds awesome.
I want to go to all those things. Lindsay, I know you're, you don't have enough things to do, in life, but, can you give our listeners the information, to where they can find
all your things.
Absolutely. Website. Yeah. The easiest way to find out about Bar Institute is to go to thebarinstitute.org. You'll be able to check up on where we're going to be next year and what our class schedules look like. CampRunamuck.org does the same thing, but more content over on Facebook/CampRunamuck. Same thing for King Camp, Facebook/CaneCamp. And yeah, you can find me at Live the Lush Life on Twitter, and which I barely use anymore, Instagram, and also over there on Facebook as myself, Lindsay Johnson.
Yeah. You're the best.
You're really awesome. You're really sort of kind of a powerhouse in sort of. I feel like every day we open up the doors at our bar and we host people and we show them a good time. But your everyday job is to show all of us in the industry a good time. So like you host the hosts,
and you crazy. Guys well you guys deserve it. So I'm glad to do it. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad we get to chat for even albeit a very short period of time. But thanks for coming in the studio. Next time, let's next time you're in town, let's do this again.
Yes, and next time
if you can carve out some time.
I always have time for you guys, and hopefully you know, next time is not not a day like today.
Right,
we'll be a much happier day.
It's a rough day for all of us.
Yeah.
We're getting through it, though.
We are.
And it's nice to be in a studio with so many smiling faces.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So definitely check out Camp Runamuck, King Camp, Live the Lush Life.
Bar Institute.
Bar Institute. I mean, like,
Juniper Luza. Soon to come Cognac something or other. We're going to come up with a clever name.
Yeah, if you guys have a clever name, please.
Cognac Maniacs. I think it's taken.
We'll come up with something.
All right, fine.
You've had too many Unibergs today. All right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Lindsay, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
See you next time. Till next week.
Well, let's talk about that real fast. Next week we have the Sams, two Sams, Sam Lewinton, Sam Penix, the geniuses behind Everyman Espresso, which is was last year, I think, rated number one espresso in the country. That's nothing to laugh about.
Yeah.
Pretty serious about their coffee. These guys are nerding out over grounds. And then we're going to maybe try and talk them into coming over to Grand Army and doing some coffee-inspired cocktails for a happy hour immediately following. So they'll be on the show live next week at 3 o'clock.
All right, cool. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out heritageradionetwork.org for many, many more programs like this. Until next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
All right, cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul.
Today's program is brought to you by Egg Restaurant. For over 10 years, Egg has focused on making the best breakfasts in New York, with a menu that combines southern-inflected classics like biscuit, grits, and country ham, with dishes like duck hash, chorizo, and eggs, pancakes dripping with Vermont maple syrup, and more vegetables than you ever dreamed of eating before noon. But what gets them up every morning at Egg is something different. It's the chance to improve everything they encounter, the lives of the people who work with them, the lives of their customers, the health of their local economy, and the soil their food is grown in. Their interest in food goes way beyond what they put on your plate. Food touches on everything they care about: flavor, health, social justice, art and literature, agriculture and ecology. It's one of the reasons Egg Restaurant is so happy to support Heritage Radio, who digs into everything that matters every week. For more information, visit eggrestaurant.com.